When John Millington Synge's masterpiece, The Playboy of the Western World, was first performed in Dublin in 1907, there were riots in protest. The black comedy, with its tale of attempted patricide, was seen as going beyond the limits of decency, and was even accused of putting the Irish nation into disrepute. Set in an isolated and poor rural community, Synge's play relishes the wealth of Western Irish dialect, and today is universally acknowledged as one of the classics of Irish drama. But what does that have to do with the Czech Republic? In this programme, we're going to be telling the fascinating story of how The Playboy of the Western World also came to be a Czech classic. It began with Karel Mušek, a director of Prague's National Theatre, and one of the last of the great tradition of actor-directors. In 1905, he came across Synge's work more or less by chance, and he immediately fell in love with his writing, translating and staging his one-act play In the Shadow of the Glen at Prague's Švanda Theatre, the first production of Synge in any foreign language. Ondřej Pilný from Prague's Charles University has long been intrigued by this unexpected Czech-Irish link. He picks up the story.
Mušek proceeded to correspond with Synge, and he decided to go and visit the playwright in Ireland, and spent about 2 weeks in Ireland. Half of the trip was spent with Synge himself in Dublin, where Mušek met members of what was the new National Theatre, the Abbey Theatre in Dublin, and then was dispatched by Synge to the west of Ireland to meet Lady Gregory at Coole Park and the poet W.B. Yeats as the central figures of the Irish National Theatre and of the literary revival. Together with some other authors, spent a few days at Coole Park hiking around and taking photographs, which is another curious link between Mušek and Synge, because both of them were avid photographers at the beginning of the century, which was surely not usual, and they left a collection of fairly unique snapshots of the Irish countryside.
And it's quite intriguing, isn't it? It must have been extraordinary for him to see the contrast between the poverty in the countryside and the wealth of the Irish gentry, in particular Lady Gregory herself. And he actually described it, didn't he, afterwards?
Yes, as you say, the contrast between the countryside and Coole Park itself was stunning to Mušek. Now, Mušek himself grew up in an orphanage here, so he came from, you know, very humble circumstances, but he was still shocked by the poverty that he saw in the Irish countryside. But then when he was eventually ushered into Coole Park itself, into the big house, he was stunned. He said, "This is probably the one and only time in my life when I'm spending a night in a bedroom with a Velázquez painting on the wall." And he wrote a sort of extended travelogue, a series of articles for one of the Prague journals, where he outlined his experiences. And this is, for instance, what he said about the dinner being served at Coole Park. "When the entire company, consisting of Lady Gregory, her son Robert, W.B. Yeats, and two ladies, were gathered in the library, which was adjacent to the dining room, the butler entered and announced that dinner was ready. This always consisted of a soup, fish or salad, poultry, roast meat, a dessert, and fruit. The food was being brought to the table by the butler, who placed it in front of the mistress of the house, that is, Lady Gregory. She distributed it onto individual plates, which were then carried to their destinations around the table by a chambermaid. The meal was being washed down with wine, sherry, and claret. Beer did not arrive at the table whatsoever." I love this image of Lady Gregory as a mama serving the food to her guests.
And it's such a contrast, isn't it, with the world of John Millington Synge's plays, which was really the raw lives of the farmers of Western Ireland and the language they use, which would have been in total contrast with the gentility of a place like this.
This was actually one of the primary impulses for Mušek's visit, that he was a realistic director by disposition, and he insisted when he was staging Synge's plays here, he insisted on realistic detail on the stage, but he had absolutely no first-hand experience. For the first production, he used photographs that were sent to him from Dublin, photographs of Irish cottages, But here in the west of Ireland with Lady Gregory, he was taken to some houses of the so-called Irish peasantry, I mean extremely poor farmers in the west of Ireland, and he was shocked by the poverty. He said that he knew the Czech countryside quite well himself, but he has never seen such human abodes in his life.
And it's interesting because there's a political element here, isn't there? Because it was the same period as the Czech national revival, as it's called here, was in full swing, and also the struggle, the long struggle for home rule in Ireland, which eventually led to independence. He was quite interested, wasn't he? And as you say, he was shocked when he saw that the Czechs were actually much better off in terms of their national emancipation than the Irish.
Mm-hmm. He was astonished to learn that, because as many another Czech patriot, he would be used to habitual grumbling about the oppression of the Czechs and the conditions of minorities generally in the empire. But then when he was talking to Yeats in particular in the west of Ireland, Yeats could not believe the news that the Czech National Theatre was actually subsidized by the state. Again, I mean, here's a passage from the Travelogue. Mushik says, "My intimation that our theatre has been the recipient of an annual subsidy caused genuine astonishment. How? You receive a subsidy from the provincial government? What else would you wish for then? I explained that the subsidy was authorized by the provincial assembly. Further astonishment. You have an assembly? What else do you want? We have been struggling in vain to get home rule for a whole century." So yes, he was astonished indeed. And in fact, these conversations with particularly Yeats resulted in a brief correspondence where Yeats essentially asked Mushik to write down most of the information that Mushik gave him about particularly the management of the National Theatre, because the Abbey Theatre, the Irish National Theatre, was just at a very, very early stage. They only just acquired a building which they were renting, and the information from the Czech context was really useful to them, practical information about funding, staging plays, everything.
Karel Mushik came back to Prague with all these very vivid experiences of Ireland. And given that he was such an influential figure, it must have shifted the Czech theatrical scene in some way.
What was important was that the Sing plays were actually staged here very early on. They unanimously had a very short run. They became a subject of interest of critics. Half of the reviews were negative, but at least the productions were written about. And then finally, in the early 20s, Mushik funded from his own pocket the publication of these translations, together with Singh's, if you wish, literary journal, The Aran Islands. So again, we had these texts in print, so they're readily available for any theatres to take them up. And indeed, they did. The Playboy of the Western World became one of the modern classics on the Czech stages afterwards.
I'm intrigued by the Playboy of the Western World because when it was first performed in Ireland, it caused a huge controversy. There were riots in the streets, weren't there? And Prague was actually one of the first other cities where it was performed, wasn't it, in the world? And it didn't cause a scandal here in Prague, though, did it?
No, not really. I mean, the main issue with the original production concerned the authenticity of representation of the nation, which obviously was not an issue here in Prague, in the Czech lands whatsoever. Nobody really minded the various ways in which the Irish may be depicted in this play, right? So that was not an issue whatsoever. But the following production, or one of the earliest after, was in 1928 by Divadlo Dada, the Theatre Dada, directed by Jiří Frejka, which is totally avant-garde and really, really successful and essentially started what became a tradition of staging the Playboy here, as I said, as one of the very, very popular plays.
And that tradition continues to this day, doesn't it? Because there is actually a production of the Playboy of the Western World playing in Prague right now.
There is one in Gino Herring Club, one of the most successful recent productions of any plays. It won major national awards. It is indeed a very, very good production. I was trying to sort of count before this interview. There were 11 productions of The Playboy in the period between 1993 and now. So we can see that the play tends to be very frequently produced.
And how do you go about translating that extremely rich but very local language of Western Ireland into modern Czech. It takes a big cultural shift, doesn't it? How did Mušek solve that problem, and how have subsequent translators solved that problem?
Well, Mušek was facing the same problem as any translator into Czech, which concerns dialect, where English of any kind would obviously have very, very strong dialects that you could work with as a translator. Czech has relatively few dialects, and they're all sort of very distinctly localized in particular parts of the country. So essentially, if you use a Northern Moravian dialect, you're immediately making all your characters in a play coal miners, you know. So it does come with a particular stereotype. So Czech dialects are not really usable for the translation of material that's written in dialect in English originally. At the same time, Singh's language is not a sort of documentary copy of an existing dialect of English either. It is written in a very regular rhythm. So unless you're ready to say that, yes, there's a place on earth where people speak in verse, you must acknowledge that the language is synthetic completely. And yes, it does use idiom, turns of the phrase from the Irish language or from different dialects of English. But it is all completely synthetic, so that perhaps helps when you try and tackle a sing play, that you have to keep an eye on the rhythm, at the same time invent a language that would sound like a dialect, but not as an existing one. It is quite challenging.
At the moment, there's a great interest in contemporary Irish drama in the Czech Republic. At any one time, there are several productions of contemporary Irish plays performing in Prague. Do you think that the part of that is the legacy of Mušek?
I wouldn't dare to make claims like that, really, because there are various ways in which plays reach the Czech stage. If you survey the recent situation, translators surely have a say in this, that you have individuals who sort of discover plays, translate them and offer them to theatres, but there is also much more travel than there was before, so you have directors on a fairly regular basis going to see plays in Germany, in London, etc., and quite a lot of the repertoire is actually influenced by things like what is a current hit at the Royal Court Theatre in London, for instance. That's one of the main reasons why the work of Martin McDonagh, for instance, has reached us so early here, that we have now all the plays on stage or have been staged.
So, Andrzej Pilny, thank you very much indeed for talking to Radio Prague.
Thank you very much for the invitation.